This passage is from Isaiah, 25th chapter. Verses 7 and 8. And he will destroy in this mountain the face of the covering cast over all people, and the veil that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death in victory, and the Lord God will wipe away tears from off all faces. And the rebuke of his people shall he take away from off all the earth, for the Lord hath spoken it. The veil that is covering the face of all nations is to be wiped away. And we may speculate on the nature of that veil. But today we're going to do it in quite a different way. We're going to look at television. And we're looking at a chorus of 500 singers. Throw in a little ballet, if you will. And there they are, performing. They're all on the right side of you. To the right of you in the studio is this great ballet and choir. Live. Singing, dancing. But to the left of you, there's a television screen. And there's the same ballet and choir on the television screen to the left of you, whereas to the right of you, they are in the flesh. Now you'll notice that everything they do to the right of you appears on the screen to the left of you. So that as you watch them on the screen, you are watching an image that appears there because there is a live performance to the right of you. And you'll notice that there's no one on that screen that can drop out of the picture of their own volition. That little ballerina up in the front left on the screen, she can't even scratch her nose if she wishes to. Because if she wants to scratch her nose, it must first happen on the living ballerina to the right of you. And if that same ballerina to the right of you goes out of the room, out of the studio, you will see that she drops out of the picture on the screen. Everything on that screen depends upon what is happening in the live personalities who are performing. Now let's change the picture. Let's have a boy and a girl to the right of you and watch them on the screen. They're kissing. Now, can she on the screen suddenly slap his face if the live girl to the right of you in the studio doesn't slap his face first? Is there anything that she or he can do on the screen independent of what the boy and girl are doing in the studio? And you see that the image is totally dependent upon the live person. Now let's say that that boy is sick. There he is, he's grieving, he has cancer. And the girl is very unhappy. And you, as only a TV viewer, you would be very unhappy for her sake. For there's this handsome lad, and he's only got 3 weeks to live. But that's on the screen. Look to the right of you, and there's an actor playing a part. He hasn't got 3 weeks to live. He's going to live till next week's show. And so you find now that the actor, the real actor, doesn't have cancer, only the one on the screen. And you begin to differentiate between the reality and the image. Now we have an Indian scene, and all the horses drop down. How many were killed? Do they kill the horses, or do they just fall down and seem to be? Do they kill all the actors? Do they kill all the Indians? Or have we been looking at images and momentarily got lost in those images? Finally, it's very clear to us that nothing on the screen happens except it first happens in life, and that which happens in life determines that which appears on screen. Once you have carefully separated the two, you can now see that the same thing is happening from world mind to person. That when the person lifts his hand, he isn't lifting his hand, but rather something is happening in the world mind which appears as person lifting hand. When the person dies, he isn't dying. Rather, something is happening in world mind which appears as person dying. And you begin to get the idea that this world is a television screen, and that whatever happens in it must first happen somewhere else. Just as the boy who had cancer on the screen had to first be acting to have cancer off the screen. Just as the girl who wanted to leave the TV room left it, and then her image disappeared from the screen. Whatever happens on this earth first happens invisibly in the world mind. That world mind is where the activity takes place, and the screen of matter, where the images called forms, people, animals, nature, appear. These are the appearances on the screen of that which is transpiring in the invisible world mind. Now, this may seem to you somewhat far-fetched, but I mean it literally, not as a symbology. It is what takes place. And if you look at the world mind for a moment, you will see that it is pointed directly at the real divine image. The divine image mentioned in the Bible as creation. The divine image mentioned in the Bible as man. Reality. That which is. And pointed at this reality, this true creation, is this world mind making its photograph, its continuous photograph. And as it takes the photograph of spirit, this spirit, which is invisible to us, photographed by the world mind, is now focused the other way and becomes the image. Spirit, through the world mind, focused into visibility, becomes the physical, visible, tangible image, which is the world mind's impression of reality. And now you're looking at the images and calling them mother, brother, sister, father, son, and my own self. Dog, cat, antelope, giraffe. These are the images on the screen, projected by the world mind. And whatever happens in the world mind appears on the screen as the activity of the world. There is a way you're going to see all the good and the evil, which has been real to us, but which exists only in the world mind. And as you are able to feel, the image nature of the world that we see, you find that you have the capacity to draw back from the images, the appearances, and to view them without accepting them at their face value. You can see that the images are comprised of those things which normally are your sense impressions, and that the images are not only in form, but images in taste, in smell, in touch, and each of these represents that combined activity of the world mind through yours finally appearing as the taste, smell, touch, etc. Now we're looking at a broken bone. But we're remembering that that which appears on the screen of TV is based upon that which is happening in the studio. And so the broken bone on TV obviously is not a broken bone in the studio. The actor doesn't break his bones to play the part that realistically. It's the appearance of a broken bone. Similarly, the broken bone in the image of this world is a thought, an idea, appearing in material form. And when you can separate yourself from that idea in consciousness, you discover the bone isn't broken. When you can view the cancer that appears on the screen of the human personality, of the human form, and disassociate yourself from that idea and the belief in it, you find you overcome the cancer. As you develop the capacity to witness the image with no belief in its veracity, with a consciousness that all that happens is a television image on a cosmic level, you will find you can stand still and behold the salvation of the Lord. You are rending the veil that covers the face of all nations. You are seeing that cosmic television is the nature of this world. You are seeing the evil of it and the good of it as images presented to you by a counterfeit mind on a cosmic level, which is interpreting the perfect creation and has no capacity to do so. At first, you may shrink from this, or if something has happened in you to this point that gives you an understanding, a foundation to realize that this is the truth, you will find that through practice, you can look at this world and whatever occurs in it with the understanding that nothing, either the good or the bad, is of God. That all is the recreated image of the world mind. And you can walk through it, not grasping at it, not clinging to it, not regarding everything as an adversary to which you must react. And you can find your peace right here in this three-dimensional image world, knowing that all it is a five-sense image projection. You can smell something that smells rather offensive to you, and in the realization that this is an image happening in the world mind coming to your attention as an image and smell, you can eliminate it. You can face a pain and realize this is an idea in world mind coming to your attention as a pain, and you can diminish it and then eliminate it. Always the truth that you know in consciousness, that the image world of man is not your Father's kingdom, enables you to observe the appearances without judgment, without reaction, and finally to determine a course of action that will enable you to walk through these images untouched. And that course of action may be described partially by the Beatitude, "Blessed are they that mourn." The moment you learn that the meaning of mourning is to become dead to the images that are presented to you in this world, you understand why the Master could say, "Blessed are they that mourn, they shall be comforted." For behind this television image on a cosmic scale, called the world, there is another television image on an infinite scale called the kingdom. And it is only when you pass the point in which you can agree with this adversary, in which you can stand face to face with the images of the world, unmoved, in understanding, non-reactive, that you are then said to be in agreement. And in this zero point of non-reaction, you become aware of the refined images that lie behind the images of the mortal mind. There is a complete universe standing behind it, and it is the divine television image. It is perfect in every respect. It is heaven on earth. It is inhabitable by the one who stands still in the face of that which is not, recognizing the non-validity of the images presented by the senses, reacting not to them, but through truth, recognizing that God is the allness, and therefore God being spirit, behind the material appearances called images in this work, there is the spiritual universe which presents to you a completely different kind of image. An image that is not measured by the senses, nor discerned by them. A divine image. An image in which there is only harmony, only peace, only truth, only life, without death. Now, the birth of the babe has been worshipped every year now since Christmas became an international event. And every year, man returns to worship a tiny child. We did it last year. We'll do it again next year. We've done it for centuries. It's as if man is stuck at a certain point and cannot grow up. And so this year's child is the same age as last year's. Always the infant remains the infant, as if we, in our incapacity to grow, refuse to let the infant Christ grow up. But the infant Christ is not an infant anymore. It's ever been ready to do its father's business on this earth. And as we get off this rut of worshiping an infant child every year and come to the point of seeing the meaning of the Immaculate Conception, we continue living in the images of the counterfeit mind of the world, parroting those images in our daily lives, and finally, having lived in an image that is not real, we die to the image and we step out of the world, again to reincarnate back into the dream world once more. But here comes this child, a very different kind of child, so different that many strange stories, many myths, had to be invented about it in order to establish that it was different. The honesty of the men who wrote the Bible is beyond question. Each had a great story to tell. What is questionable is, to what degree were they aware of the real story? I don't know if there's anyone who has greater respect for the Bible than I. And yet, I look at the Bible with a full realization that it is a fragmentary picture of the truth, that it has gone through many hands, that it has been changed to suit the whims of politics, of religion, of translators, and of men who had good faith but were motivated by what they felt was a good purpose. And so you can look at the Bible today, and it becomes very necessary to sift the wheat from the chaff, the symbology from the fact, and under it all to find that the underlying truth of the Bible has never been changed. Only the fringes, only the packaging, only the ribbons, the facts are there, because the truth maintains itself. And no matter how many mistranslations, no matter how many words are changed to suit a local condition, no matter how many pages of the actual originals were lost and rewritten by interested friends, still the nucleus of truth remains. And that nucleus is found in the Immaculate Conception of a child. What is different in our understanding of that child today as compared with our own understanding of it 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 2 or 1? Can we ever say that we fully understand what was behind the recording of the birth of a child to a virgin? And so this was the quest that I had in preparation for this class. And it has been answered in a way that is truth today. Tomorrow, a new truth will come. Never is the truth finite so that we can say, this is it. The chapter is closed. But always we find that today's consciousness is the moment of truth for us, and tomorrow's consciousness will be a higher moment of truth. And so no one is precluded ever from going beyond this moment. Individually or collectively, we will all rise beyond today, for sure. But we look at this child now, and we're really looking at a preview of ourselves. For this is not a child. This is a different kind of birth than any up to that moment recorded in history. Not because Joseph and Mary were not man and wife as other men and women, because they were. But a child that is different because of its own past lives. A child that had lived and had attained a very high consciousness, and because of it was able to draw to itself the mother consciousness that it needed for its next experience. The mother consciousness that it needed in order to bring into appearance the birth of a divine image instead of the image that we all see on television when a child is born into this world. This was a birth that was establishing the nature of being. This was a birth that had accomplished everything that you and I are trying to accomplish. This was spirit reborn. There was no mother, there was no father. The difference is that it was realized. And there appeared what to human sense is called a baby. But there was there only a divine idea, a perfect self, infinity individualized in a pure consciousness, ready to enact on earth the total will of God. This was the undivided consciousness appearing. And if you will, it was God appearing as. This had happened on earth many millions of times, but always obscured by the consciousness of parents and of the world. What made this birth distinctive was that the parents had been trained. They had been trained to anticipate the divine consciousness expressing through them. They had purified. They had dropped their human concepts. It is even said that Mary herself had been so conceived. And through their dedication to the one self, the one being, the one life, the one infinite spirit, they were able to, in collaboration with the consciousness of the unborn child, become channels for the appearance of a different kind of form. A form that was not under material law. But they did not make the mistake of separating the form from the life. They did not make the mistake of viewing this as a physical form. They recognized that it was life seen through the eyes of men. Whereas we came into this world as form, this child came into this world as life living itself. And this was the preview of the consciousness of man toward which we are all moving. The knowledge that we are life living itself. The fact that it was an infant merely meant that there must be a beginning. It did not mean that you and I must come into this world as an infant other than as a spiritual infant. It was teaching us that there was a moment in our consciousness when we became as a child again, spiritually aware that we are life living itself and not form. And at that moment, when we reach that level of consciousness, we too are immaculately conceived within ourselves. We are reborn of the Spirit, and we literally at that moment are that child. Now, the power of that child was such, because it was life itself, that it remained unharmed by the order of Herod to destroy all children under three. There was no power on this earth that could destroy life. when life understood itself to be life, when there was no second consciousness. No consciousness that said, I am a human being, a physical form, a human mind. All this had been obliterated. All that was there was life, divine consciousness, pure infinite mind, individualized and appearing to the rest of the world as the child. There was no child there. Never is there a material being. The world saw its television program, but it was now looking at the television program of the divine, unmasked, without the glass darkly, of a world mind between. This was the distinction of this particular birth. Each of us could then view what happens when there is a pure consciousness, devoid of the human consciousness. For example, the same child, now grown into our vision as an adult, stands before a tomb and says, come out, Lazarus. And the teaching there is that for every dead image that we see in this world on our cosmic television program, behind it there is a live image waiting to be recognized. And that is why a living Lazarus steps forth, because he has been recognized by this pure consciousness called the child. In your pure consciousness, when you vision the living image behind the dead image, you are redeeming this world. You are looking past the appearances. You are recognizing that behind the good and the evil, there is only the perfect reality. And so this child becomes the way shower, the prototype of your own life. And it says to you, if you believe on me, the works that I do, you shall do. Because this is the child that rents the veil. Having only the pure consciousness, it looks at the images on TV. And when it sees the cancer, it knows there's a studio actor behind the TV set somewhere who doesn't have the cancer. And it says, Lazarus, come forth within itself. When it sees any form of discord, it knows this is only TV. And behind it is the perfect spiritual universe. And silently it says, Lazarus, come forth. Behind every appearance, it knows the reality of spirit is. This is the pure virginal consciousness. Born of a virgin, born of a virginal consciousness, one that knows the reality behind the appearances. One that is faithful to that reality. One that sows not to the cosmic images of this world. Because this world, these images, these conditions, these persons, these objects, all that occurs in time and space, and time and space itself, is called the flesh. And so when you sow to time, you're sowing to the flesh of time. You're sowing to the flesh of space. You're sowing to the flesh of person. You're sowing to the flesh of condition. You're sowing to the flesh of the appearances, which are the cosmic television images. And behind them is a world mind, the tempter, presenting these pictures to us, and we have invariably accepted them, have fought with them, and have striven to overcome them and in some way improve them or dissolve them. not knowing that they are not there. The dial that turns the pictures off is the kingdom of God within you. And we learn that we can turn on the kingdom of God within us because that's the kingdom of divine television, the divine image and likeness, and we can get the images of the soul images instead of the mind images, the Christ images instead of the mammon images. And this becomes the way of life, the standing still, the watching, the beholding, looking at the veil, which is called birth, life, and death. And we find that just as the child becomes the adult Christ and walks the earth to be crucified, we find that we too must walk the path, but our crucifixion is a joy. We crucify the false images of this world. And we are resurrected into the divine images of my Father's kingdom on this earth. And we walk in those for a while, still as the image. But now we have the improved images. And as we walk in these improved images, it is called resurrection. All the images are now under spiritual law. No weapon can be formed against them. They are free. They are not under the law of matter, of age, of change, of pain, of suffering, because they are no longer cosmic mind images. They are divine images. They are pure form of the soul. And it's still the resurrection stage. And this Christ walks in the form called Jesus. That is the resurrection. It is still a form. And after this has been lived in, when the consciousness is established, then out of the form, out of visibility, ascended above even the images called divine, into being self without images, ascended. All this is the veil being rent by the truth in consciousness. And when one walked the earth as a prototype, the spiritual possibilities for all of us were brought into focus. Now, some of us have developed a capacity to look at the images relatively unmoved. And you will find there is a great release in you when you learn to actually look at the forms in this world as television images. You will see that the weight of them, the validity of them, the power of them, the anger of them, the hate of them, the density of them, all seems to leave your mind. The weight of the walls of a room, the floor and the ceiling begin to diminish, and you realize these truly are television images on a larger scale than a little TV set. In fact, that's why television was invented. It was a copy of the real television of the universe of man, in which images walk the earth with names. And in your Christ consciousness, you can behold these images. You can realize that you too are one. That all of the images are in one cosmic image. And the mind will squirm, But ultimately the mind will yield, for in this you will find a new kind of freedom. You have been locked into an image called form. It was the tomb from which Christ rises. You have been locked into a world mind which projects these forms, using your mind as the picture tube. Right through the picture tube called your mind comes the patterns that are translated into the form. You played a part in your own birth, a part in your own death, a part in your own concept of existence. You played a part in every virus that you put into your body when the picture tube of your mind accepted it from the world mind. You infected yourself. Unknowingly, we have accepted these pictures and have given them the name of reality. Always unaware that the perfect divine universe has none of these changing pictures of good and evil. And now we're standing still. A new strength comes into you. And just as the cancer on TV is seen through as nothing more than a visual image, so the cancer on cosmic TV is seen through as exactly the same thing on a large scale. You find in you the ability not to deny the invisible presence of God by accepting that which cannot be real if God is present. And you can label it television. You can make a test quickly to yourself sometime. Whatever it is that disturbs you must be cosmic television. It is not of God, and you can stand and face it, whether it's a smell, a taste, a pain, a condition, whatever form of discord it may be, and you will find that in the realization that it is only television, an image coming through either one, two, three, four, or five of the senses, and sometimes all five at the same time. But in your realization of that nature through which it is happening, you will find that you have actually felt a moment of relief right at that moment that you realize this. And that moment can become a complete relief. It can become a separation from the television image. And that is why we were taught to come forth and be separate. Separate from these images which have been placed before us by an invisible tempter. Now, if all of this year had brought us to the point where we could feel the measure of truth of our own being and feel the birth in us of that realization which is shown forth as the birth of a child, a holy child, a Christ consciousness. If this could come to us even in a measure, this would have been the most glorious year of our lives. For proceeding from that point, having found in a measure the capacity to behold all appearances, all smells, all sights, all sounds, all feelings, as the images of this world, you feel the rebirth which brings you into another self, a holy self in the sense that it is this child born in you. And this is the holy city, that place in you where the beginning of a new way to live is born, a new way to see, a new way to hear, a new way to know, a new way to be, a way that is too pure to behold the iniquities of this world and accept them. A way that has a fidelity to the light and not to the shadows. There is more that happens with this rebirth. This child is able to say to the storm, be still, and the storm is still. This child is able to say to the mountain, dissolve, and it is dissolved. This child can step on the ship, and it is upon the shore. All of the known laws of matter are completely disregarded. Is this child now a person or something more? Its influence extends to the oceans, to the mountains, to the sky. Its influence extends throughout the universe. Is this a child? Or is this a universe? And now the meaning of the second birth, the birth of the child, the rebirth of man to spirit becomes very clear. Your first birth was as a person. Your second birth is as a universe. You are born as a child, an infinite child. And this is the beginning of coming to understand that you never were a person, and the child is to grow into the realization that I am a universe. All that is, I am. And the invisible kingdom of God behind the fleeting pictures of the mind become your reality. You are to bring forth into experience all that exists behind the changing television pictures. The one power, the one mind, the one life, the one being, the one law, the one infinite activity is not the work of a child. It is the work of the infinite self that I am. And the rebirth is the birth into the realization that you never can be a person. There is none. There is only the infinite universe, the one infinite self. And this is the purpose of the rebirth. To come into the realization that I am that one universe. And this was exactly what this child did. I and the Father are one. The Father is the universe. I and the Father are one universe. The Father is omnipotent, so therefore I am omnipotent. As a child? As a person? No. As a universe. And now we have a new feeling about the meaning of the word universe. It doesn't mean what we thought a universe meant. This is a spiritual universe. But universe is but a word. The one spiritual being is the universe. When I say you are a spiritual being, or I am a spiritual being, the word being and universe are one and the same. The size of that being is universal. the infinite powers of that being, all must be included in this child. Son, all that I have is thine. This child, then, is divine seed. And the divine seed becomes the divine universe, the growing realization within becomes the kingdom of God realized, the universe realized as your being. And if all of this seems too overpowering for the human mind, fine. For we have outgrown that human mind. We are coming of age. We are not worshiping a tiny infant in a manger, but rather we are taking the divine truth given to the world as that tiny infant in a manger and accepting it on the terms through which it was presented. If you believe on me, the works that I do ye shall do, and greater works shall ye do. And we must accept this divine child now as my new consciousness. My new consciousness is the child the world saw in that manger. And as this divine consciousness in me matures, grows up, is accepted in the fullness of what it is, the works that this divine child did as it grew up on the earth, I shall do. As we deny the picture image on TV called my personal self, we are picking up our cross and following this divine consciousness. It ever says to us, deny thyself. Did you not know that the moment you accepted yourself to be reality, that you committed yourself to death? Do you not see that these divine images behind the world images are under the law of God, and that the images in time and space are not under the law? Do you see then the new dispensation is to reveal to you the timeless nature of your being as you crack through the cocoon of humanhood, laying down the personal sense of self, realizing that every bone in your body, the blood that flows through those bones, your vision, your hearing, all this is a temporary picture on TV. The Christ child had died to that. And had returned free. The turning within you, when you die to this, is the beginning of that freedom. We all must follow that path. And so we find within ourselves this Christ child. It is the way. This living light within us looks past all the TV pictures of this world, recognizing only its infinite self everywhere. It doesn't need diagrams or comparisons or analogies. It instantaneously is itself everywhere. And when you find the Christ child within you, releasing the TV image that you have called yourself, to the Christ child, then the will of the Father is done in you. And this will demonstrates the presence of the harmony and perfection of reality all around you. This becomes the single eye of Christ in you, witnessing the reality of perfection everywhere, and by its fidelity to the truth, dissolving the TV images of good and evil that have veiled us from reality up to this moment. It is not quite certain that Paul knew the absolute truth. It seems fairly evident that he was influenced to a certain degree by the Stoics, by Philo, by the Hellenistic culture around him, and he actually did not present the Jesus message in its purity. However, in spite of that, it is through his work that the message of Jesus became known to what is now the Christian world. But it was never the pure teaching of Jesus. It was never fully understood as oneness with God, that Jesus was Christ realized, and that this Christ realized, which was the appearance called Jesus, was the same Christ realized which would someday in each of us do on earth the identical works. You will find that although Paul was one of the seven highest lights of that era, there is much to be said in his work that argued against the very things he was teaching. You will find that Luke, as noble as he was, didn't know the full truth of Jesus, and spent much time trying to persuade the world that he came from a certain lineage of David. You will find that Matthew didn't even write his own Bible, but it was done for him by one of his own disciples, with his approval. You will find that Mark was the first who wrote the Bible, and he was just a young fellow. It was approved by Peter, under Peter's supervision, and it was written after Peter died. You will find that John didn't write John's Bible. It was written by his student Nathan, with his permission, but in the year 110. You will find that the first Bible, the first gospel actually written by Mark, was in about the year 67. And so you and I might just as well, 60 years from now, try to record what happened in our lives this very day. In our own lives, we can't remember that well. And he was recording someone else's. Always, these stories then were augmented by a desire to present the truth in a certain way. And finally, the written word coming out of the Aramaic, some of it in Hebrew and some of it in Greek. Paul wrote in Greek. Reaches the hands of people who, not being close to the original, must naturally filter their understanding through their own particular kind of intelligence. And so again, more of the teaching of Jesus is lost because certain words have no meaning for the Greek scribe who is making the translation. And so they find a word that will fit the bill as closely as possible. And then through the years, translations into the Vulgate, the Latin, and finally, along come our English translators, some great dedicated souls, but all of them totally blissfully unaware of the great meaning behind crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension, bringing us finally a message in which the world is persuaded to try to ride into heaven on the coattails of Jesus instead of finding the Christ child within. So the Bible, in spite of the many hands who have hacked away at it, has survived even them. The original spirit is still intact. But now, it being that time, that age, when man is no longer confined to the ignorance of the churches, of the philosophies, of even those well-meaning individuals throughout the world who worship the ground that Jesus walked upon,